You see, because here's what I feel is I feel like everybody loves a good victory story. I mean, honestly, everybody loves a competition, especially when it's close, especially when the underdog comes from behind and just takes it. You know, when they just rip the face off of the competition. Man, I love it. I think it's really kind of cool, personally. I mean, is there anybody here from last Sunday? Last Sunday night, we had a battle of the sexes. Guys versus girls. We put it up. The video's up there. Yeah, we put the video up. And this is what I love. This is one reason why I love doing things like this at church. Because it was guys versus girls. I mean, it was the girls were clobbering the guys. It was pretty bad. They were just taking care of business. You know what I'm saying? And then at the end, it became a tie. I don't know how it just became a tie, okay? So, it'll be cheating up in this room, okay? Shoot. I'll make up my own rules. So we had to do this tiebreaker, and it was this push-up competition, guys versus girls, and man, it was down to the minute. I mean, it was down to it. Oh, okay. It was down to the little bittiest. Really? I have to change the battery already? Am I that? No. Anyway, give me this. We'll be all right. Man. Okay. So here we are, and it's going down, man. And it's just the very last minute, and just everybody erupts in this huge, clamorous, screaming match. It was cool. and it turns out the girls won. but that's all right, because it's always next year. And I love stuff like that. I really do. And I love it, especially when people come from the unexpected team wins or whatever the case may be. I love it because I think it's a picture of what God does. You know, and in 1 Corinthians, the Bible says that God uses the foolish things. God uses the unexpected things. God uses sometimes even the undignified things to put to shame the wise or the noble. And I feel like that's something that we live in. You know, if you look at it, one of the funniest verses in the Bible is there's a man sitting under a tree and he says, gosh, can anything good come out of this city, Nazareth? Nazareth? It's this little tiny, podunk in the middle of nowhere city. Nobody really important lives there. And this guy's just saying, he's just looking at this city over the hill. And he says, can anything really good come out of that city? And then what happens is Jesus walks up to him. Jesus of Nazareth. And the man eats his own words. Because the greatest, the goodest, the bestest thing that creation has ever known, Jesus Christ, comes out of this little nobody city. You know, and I look at it and I think of San Bernardino. I was born and raised in San Bernardino. 909 IE, what's up, okay? Paris Hill Road, okay? That's where I come from. And I think here's this little tiny city, well, somewhat smallish, medium-sized city, San Bernardino. I mean, just yesterday they voted to declare bankruptcy. The city of San Bernardino is declaring bankruptcy. It's like number one on so many lists you're not supposed to be number one on, you know, it's like, and this is San Bernardino. And it's funny, you know, the largest church in California, the eighth largest economy of the world, the largest church in California is in, I think it's like Lake Forest or whatever it is. It's a church called Saddleback Church, out in Orange County. And the second largest, you know, Orange County, I mean, people are making bank out there. I mean, it's, for goodness sakes, the OC is based on Orange County. The second largest church in California is a church in San Bernardino, one of the poorest, most violent cities in America, the Rock Church and World Outreach Center. And it's funny to see these two churches, the largest and the second largest, come from such different areas. I believe people are saying, what good can come out of San Bernardino? You know, my sister Beth, she just flew back to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and her friends make fun of her because of where she comes from San Bernardino area. And they said, gosh, Beth, when you were gone for 1 week, and by the time you came back, you know, there was 3 murders, a cop shot somebody, and your city declared bankruptcy in 1 week. It's like, it's good to have you back, you know, and these things happen. But if you look closely enough, these are the same words that this man said a couple thousand years ago. What good can come out of Nazareth? If you look close enough, God's looking for a city like this, a school like yours, a family like yours, to show how good He is, to use the foolish things to confound the wise. I love an underdog story because I believe that's the story of our church. I believe that's the story of our city. In 1 Samuel chapter 22. We're going to stay in 1 and 2 Samuel. I only got two passages of scripture for you. But in 1 Samuel, there's an interesting verse, and it talks about a boy named David. He was supposed to become king, but instead the current king, a man named King Saul, doesn't really like God's decision. You know, so here's this boy, you know, in his late teens, and he finds out he's supposed to be king. So what does the current king do? Well, he says, well, let's kill him, because I don't really like this kid David. I don't really like the fact that he's not my boy. I don't really like the fact that it's that God is not choosing me right now to keep on being the king. So King Saul ends up putting a hit out on David. And what does David do? Well, like any smart guy, he runs. And brother better get out of Dodge. I mean, if you got people coming out after you with spears and bows and horses and chariots, and you're like 18, well then if you're smart, you will leave town. Okay? So the boy David leaves town, and King Saul has an entire army of Israel chasing after him. They're hunting him down with all their weapons and all their forces. And King David, and this boy who's going to be king, David, he's being chased through the desert. He's being chased through the hills. And finally, he finds himself in a place where there's nothing but caves. So he hides out in a cave. And he's hiding with nothing. And all of a sudden, this verse picks up in 1 Samuel 22. It says, David therefore departed from there and escaped to a cave in a place called Adullam. So when his brothers and his father's house heard it, they went down with him. And it says this in verse 2, it says something interesting. It says, and everybody who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, everyone who was discontented gathered to David. So what did he do? He became captain over them. He was in charge of the losers. That's what it says. I mean, look, if somebody owes you $20, you don't want to hang out with them, because a fool owes you $20. Where am I $20 at? You bought a brand new pair of shoes, but you couldn't give me $20? Who wants to be around that guy? I mean, seriously. You just got your nails done, and you're asking me to buy you lunch today? You owe me $20. It says this, and it says, David became captain over the losers, the misfits, the rejects, the unloved, the punks, the dorks, the geeks, the nerds, the loners. David became captain over them. About 400 men, 400 losers with David. As David's hiding from a king of a nation who's hunting him. Now something interesting happens, because the story continues on. David's on the run. These 400 men turn into his army. They begin to, they begin to train. They begin to learn. They begin to, and all of a sudden, more people begin to find David. David goes from city to city to city. And these 400 men turn into 6, turn into 7. They turn into a whole army of men. And all of a sudden, all the losers seem to, it's like all of a sudden somebody put a bulletin out. If you are a loser, David will take you. So he finds and gathers all these freaks, and he becomes an army. Now, if you go on and you go to 2 Samuel, the next book, in chapter 22, an entire book over, even 23, in verse 13, David's beginning to recount everything he did. And he says these, in verse 8, 23 verse 8, it says, now these are the names of the mighty men whom David had. You see, all of a sudden, the ones in debt, the discontented, the down and outers, the losers, at the end of this life, they went from being down and out, and they became the mighty men of David. I mean, there's stories, and we're going to read through a couple of them. The stories of these men throughout the Bible are known. These are the heroes. This is the A-team, man. These are, these are the special forces, the Green Berets. These are the Navy SEALs of Israel's history. These are the ones. This is Navy SEAL Team 6 right here, okay? These are the people that take care of business. And it's the same people that found David in that cave. They went from discontented, debt-ridden, depressed losers to, at the end of this time, they went from that to become mighty men. You see, David and God turned these losers into champions. They turned them into the mighty men of legendary status. You see, inside of every one of you, I don't know what people have told you, what they've spoken about you. I don't know how you feel about yourself. I don't know what you see when you wake up in the morning. But inside each and every one of us is the same type of person. Even though you may feel depressed, inside of you is a champion, and inside of you is a mighty man or a mighty woman. Inside of every one of you is a potential that simply needs to be awakened and unlocked. Because you were born to be someone who's an overcomer. You know, what does the Bible tell us? It says, greater is he who is in you than he who's in the world. That means that inside of you is somebody who has victory, and it simply needs to be taken out of you. It simply needs to come from the inside of you to the outside of you. Because look, if Jesus is inside of you, and Jesus is everything that we say he is, then you've already won the battle. You just need to begin to live inside of it. Because you, my friend, are a champion. You just have not won your first game yet. It's the same thing with those men who were depressed. They were running from something. And it wasn't until they found a man inside of a cave that they became a champion and a person who could overcome every problem they were trying to leave behind. They just need somebody to bring it out of them. And that's what God's desire is for you. Because inside of every person that you meet is a champion, including yourself. When you look at that person in the mirror, you need to remember that. Don't see what's growing out your forehead. Don't see what you don't like about yourself. Don't see what you do and don't like about your body. Don't see what your report card says. Don't see what your uncle tells you. But you need to see what God speaks about you. Because it's what God says and what God's done inside of you that matters. If you go down a couple verses, it says, these are the names of the mighty men who David had. And begin to say all these weird, crazy names. And it goes down to verse 11. It says, and after this one was a man named Shammah. I mean, mom was excited when he saw him. Shammah. That is a fun name. And after him was a man named Shammah, the son of Agi the Hararite. And the Philistines had gathered together a troop where there was a piece of ground full of lentils, beans. So the people fled from the Philistines as they were coming to take this Bean Hill. But this man, Shammah, stationed himself in the middle of the field, and he defended it and killed the Philistines. You see, there's different things that you need to do. And I think we could learn from these men who were losers who became somebody that God could use to bring out and awaken that champion inside of you, to awaken that person who, instead of being down and out, can rise up against what's facing you. Because it's so easy to sit back and lose. It's so easy to sit back and say, nobody likes me. I can never do this. This is my problem. And I got this, and I got this, and I got this. It's so easy to sit back and do it. But God's called us to bigger things. You see, Shammah was a mighty man. He was a loser, but he became a mighty man. Why? Because he refused to quit. Everybody else was running from this army, this Philistine army that was coming. And you know what? And the silly thing is, all he was trying to protect was this dumb field of beans. I mean, you could grow beans anywhere, man. What's so special about these beans? Well, I don't know. But there's something inside of him that said, I cannot give this ground up. Because look, if you run from this, when are you going to stop running? If you run once, when will you stop running? Because if you run once, it'll be easier to run the next time. And if you quit now, it'll be easier to quit the next time. You know, once you do something, it's always easier to do it the second time. And if you begin to live a life that quits this and quits that, it's just going to be easy to quit every... Look, we are raised in America to quit. Go from boyfriend to boyfriend to girlfriend to girlfriend. Divorce rate is so high because we quit on marriages. We quit thing after thing. I mean, look. That's why gyms boost their membership and all their deals in January, because they know you're just gonna quit in a couple months anyway. They get you a 6-month contract in January, because you're never gonna show up again. Them donuts is too tasty. We quit time and time again. We're used to quitting. We're trained to quit. But a true champion, someone who believes what God says about them, will refuse to quit. You know, one of the most expensive, most valuable trophies in the world was the trophy, the NBA trophy, 1997. The Bulls versus the Jazz. Some of us in this room may not have been born yet. But there was a man named Michael Jordan. Anybody know Michael Jordan? Thank you. Somebody in this house. One of the greatest basketball players ever lived. brother was a bull. Hey, don't be hating, all right? Don't be hating. All right, whatever. But truthfully, Michael Jordan. It was game five of the playoffs. Bulls were down by 38 points. 38 points. And throughout the entire game, the best player on their team, the one, he was sick. He had a flu. It was a really bad flu. Michael Jordan, he's playing at 38 points down. And he's so sick that in between plays, he was throwing up on the sidelines. And the clock was ticking down, 38 points down, 35 points down, 32 points down, 30 points down. And he's playing, he's pushing through, he's shooting and he's passing and he's going on, he's barfing his brains out on the side. And he's going back. Whenever they called timeout, what he'd do is he'd go sit down and the doctors on the sidelines would put IVs inside of him to rehydrate him. That's how bad it was. As every timeout, they would intravenously with a needle rehydrate the man. Why? So he could get his butt back out there in the court, and he can begin to shoot these two and these threes and play with the team. And all of a sudden, it comes down to it, and it's just seconds left in the game. And what happens? He begins to take it, and he wins the game for the team. Seals the deal, and the Bulls that year from behind win the championship. Brother refused to quit. Brother refused to quit. Look, if I throw up, I'm going home. All right? And I work at a desk. That's just it is. Pastor Richard's tummy has a grumble. I'm ready for some chicken soup, okay? I mean, I hate to say, but nobody's going to be rolling an IV into my office and say, all right, so I can do more data entry and spreadsheets and, No. And this is Michael Jordan. This is the championship, man. The man refused to quit. Shama was faced with an entire army over a hill of beans, not a trophy, a simple hill of beans, and he stayed the ground. And because he did, he refused to quit, and he chose today, that day to be the day that I stop running. So the question is today is, what are you running from? What problem have you refused to face? Which thing have you been putting off? What conversation have you not had with that family member that you need to have? And today, I'm going to ask you this, is when are you going to stop running? When are you going to face your giants? And when are you going to stab some fool in the eye? Not a fool, but a problem, because that's illegal, okay? Because you have to make a choice of when is enough enough, and when am I going to stop running from the fears that have been put in front of me? Some people are professional runners, but Shama said, I'm done retreating. Somebody's going down, and if it's got to be me, then let it be known that Shama refused to quit, that he died on his feet fighting, because that's what a champion does. I'm going to tell you this, even at the end of this game, even the opposing team was cheering him. Look, you're doing pretty good when the other team wants you to win. Because he refused to quit. It's the heart of a champion, and that's inside of every one of us. And inside of every one of us, there's a champion that has to respect and honor the coach. Look, one of the biggest tragedies, I think, in sports history is a man named Dennis Rodman. Back from the 90s, too. I know I'm old. But he had so much potential. He had so much talent. He had a personality that could get him deal after deal of sponsors and endorsements. But he wouldn't play. He wouldn't play nice. He wouldn't play with the other players. He wouldn't listen to his authority. So all of a sudden today, over a decade later, he's broke, failed marriages. He's done some really stupid stuff. He's an alcoholic, and he's at the bottom of his game. Why? Because he never learned to honor and to respect people. You guys ever heard of a man named Benedict Arnold? Who's heard of Benedict Arnold? Are you all in U.S. history? Okay. Who is Benedict Arnold? Who is Benedict Arnold? No. You've heard of him. First word that pops in your head, Benedict Arnold. Traitor. Benedict Arnold is traitor. Who's heard? That's what he is, right? He's a backstabber. You're what? Did you pass it? Yeah, AP, what'd you get? Did you get a 4 or 5? You got a 3? That's right. Bring it, girl. 3 on AP test. That's what I'm talking about. Benedict Arnold. He's a traitor. Did you know that Benedict Arnold was one of the greatest military men in the Revolutionary War? He's the reason. Benedict Arnold is the reason, one of the reasons we won our freedom from England. Did you know that? He was one of the greatest military strategists of that time. But you know him as a traitor. Why? Because he refused to honor those who were over him. He didn't listen to his commanders. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. He did the exact opposite. And in the end, he turned his back on America. And he died in England, diseased, wounded, and poor, because he didn't understand honor. I'm going to tell you this. It's crazy. But if you want to become somebody that God's called, if you want to rise to the place that God's called you, you have to understand honor. If you have a job, you need to respect your boss. If you have a mom or a dad, you need to honor your mom or dad. I'm not saying that everything they do is right, but you need to honor and respect them. What's the first commandment? Honor your mother and father. Honor is a principle that a champion, that a mighty man understands. And if you can't honor authority, I'm not saying that everything they do is right, because it's not. But if you can't honor them, then you will never achieve the status of someone who is considered a mighty man in God's eyes. God's entire kingdom operates on honor and respect. In Proverbs, what does God say? It says, the beginning of knowledge is what? The fear of God. Honoring God. That's the beginning. The first step you need to learn as a person who believes and loves God is to honor and respect God. Without that, you're not even going to make it to step two. You see, it continues on in 2 Samuel. It says this, 2 Samuel 23, verse 13. It says this, and three of the 30 chief men, the top 30 went down at harvest time. They came and saw David in the cave of Adullam. And the troops of the Philistines were encamped in a valley called Rephaim. And David was in this stronghold with his men and in the garrison of the Philistines, right when the beginning, when the 400 got him. It says, and the Philistines were in the city called Bethlehem. That was David's city. That was his hometown. That was his place. That was his spot. And the enemy had conquered his city. And David began to get a little sentimental. He began to say, and there he was, and he was in the stronghold with his people while the Philistines were at his hometown. And David said with longing, he was hurting, he was remembering the good old days with his teddy bear. He said, oh, that someone would give me a drink of water from the well of Bethlehem, where I used to put my little pinky toe as a baby, where I would play with my brothers and eat cheese by the sheep. Oh, if only would somebody would give me a drink of water by the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. So what happened? The three mighty men, they were walking by and they heard David crying. And they said, he wants something? And they heard the water they wanted. So the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines. They said, brother want some water? Brother gonna get some water. So they put on their swords. They got their nines and they got themselves on their horses and they sped down and they did some ninja status moves through the Philistine camp and they got themselves a cup full of water from the Bethlehem well and they brought it back through ninja status moves. All of a sudden they got back to David and said, David, here is your Dasani water, sir. And King David said, what? You did this for me? He said, fool, what are you, crazy? And it says, they drew water from the well at Bethlehem that was by the gate. They took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, David would not drink it, but poured it out to the Lord. He poured one out for the homies. That's what it says. Because the water was so special to him, he said, this water is so special, like there's no way I could drink it myself because of what you guys risked. Because of the honor you've given me, this water is too valuable even for me to drink. You see, these men were mighty. They were remembered for getting a glass of water, guys. They're in the Bible for getting a glass of water. That's the dumbest thing in the entire world. I mean, seriously. Of like the 1,500 pages in the Bible, if the only thing you were remembered for was getting a cup of water, it's like, Lord, seriously, you could put me somewhere in another chapter somewhere, right? Right, God? I mean, seriously, but they were remembered, and it has nothing to do with the water. Nothing to do with the water. The water is dumb. That's not even the point. The point is they had such a respect and such an honor for their guy that they risked their lives to honor them. How many times have we told our parents, I hate you, I wish I was never born? How many times have we punched holes in walls over these dumb things? How many times have we made fun of and said horrible things about our substitute teachers and our coaches And for those of you that have jobs, you're managers and supervisors. How many times have we dishonored people that God has put over us? Look, the Apostle Paul lived in a time where the king of the day, the Roman Caesar, was killing Christians, but Paul still prayed for him. Because everything God does is based off of honor and respect. We could learn a thing or two from these men who risked their lives over a stupid glass of water to honor their supervisor. They risked their lives for that. That's why Benedict Arnold is a traitor. You don't remember anything good he did unless you dig deep into it. First word, I mean, that's what you call a traitor, is a Benedict Arnold. That's what he's known as. That's his name now. It's ruined. Ruined. Ain't nobody naming their kid Benedict Arnold. They name him George. They name him Washington. Heck, there's even three people in America that are named ESPN. Ain't nobody named Benedict Arnold. I know. I don't know what they're born with. Their mom's like, smoking. Not saved. Not saved, guys. Not saved. But ain't nobody named him Benedict Arnold. All because he had no honor. Ruined his entire hundreds of years. Ruined it. And lastly, this, and we're done. Shut it down because brother talked too much. Is a champion will always see the impossible as a possibility. Always see impossible as impossibility. I mean, the word possible is inside impossible. Seriously, that's just vocabulary. I know, that wasn't very good, but I'm trying here, guys. Right after that story, it continues in 2 Samuel 23:18 through, it says, now Abishai, two men. Now Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah. No, we're still talking about Abishai, guys. Don't get mixed up with that. All right, the chief of another top three men lifted his spear against what? 300 men, killed them, and he won a name amongst these three top men. Was he not most honored of three? Therefore, he became their captain. However, he did not attain to the first three. Benaiah was the son of Jehoiada. That's okay. Don't get jacked up on that one. It's just Benaiah. The son of a valiant man from Kabzeel. And that's a place, not a name. He says, who had done? We're starting to talk about Benaiah here. Benaiah did many deeds. He killed two lion-like heroes of Moab. And I don't know if that means that they were ugly or what, but they were lion-like heroes. And he had gone down and killed a lion in the midst of a pit on a snowy day. He got stuck in a hole with a lion and killed it. I mean, talk about a bad day. He was stuck in a hole with a lion after killing two lion-like guys. I don't even know what that means. It just sounds bad. He says, and then he killed an Egyptian. But wait, not just any Egyptian, get this, a spectacular man. Brother was spectacular. Spectacularly killed him. Because that's the only way you kill a spectacular man, spectacularly. Okay, anyway, other point. Okay, it says a spectacular man killed him. He killed him. He took the spear out of the Egyptian's hand and killed it with his own spear. Man, he says, he went down with a staff, wrestled the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, and killed him with his own spear. You see, these two men saw him. They said, if this is difficult, bring it on. If it's impossible, well, how about we make it possible? If it seems challenging, I'm going to go head on. You know, a lot of times we do the easiest thing set before us. If it's challenging, we find another way. Instead of going through the mountain, we want to go around the mountain. Instead of fighting traffic, we want to go through the fast pass, okay? Look, if I don't have to take AP, then I won't take AP. I don't have to learn how to sing. That's why God invented auto-tune, right? You take the easiest, the least path of resistance. No, these men took the greatest path of resistance. Because the only way you can become a champion is through doing great things. And the problem a lot of times is we want the easiest way. We want a microwave meal. When God's called us to make something slow cooked in the oven. The only way you get good things is you fight for them. Anything worth having is difficult. And anything that's not difficult is not worth having. That's why fast food is cheap. Because it ain't good. And that's why filet mignon is expensive. Because that sucker melt in your mouth. I had a good filet mignon. I still remember it. juices. I don't know what they fed that cow, but it was tasty. So, see, expensive things oftentimes are worth their weight in gold. But things are cheap and easy. They don't last. See, these guys did difficult things and they looked for them. You see, a lot of times we ask God, why? Why do you want me to do that, God? Why? We say, why, God, why? God, why is my life so hard? We say, God, if I'm such a good person, why is this happening to me? No. You should be saying, why not? Instead of why? Why? God, why are things so bad? Lord, just take me now. Because I can't take it anymore. Why did he break up with me? I don't know. Why? Why didn't Justin Bieber retweet me? Why won't he follow me on Instagram? I don't know, because he's Canadian. Instead, we say, why not? When the world tells you, stay down, you need to answer it. I'm not doing that. Look, you have a future that God's planned out for you. You have a future that God's designed from the very beginning of time to do great and amazing things. Why not? You can die only having one marriage in your life. Why not? You can stand up for purity and the standards over your body. Why not? You could bring revival into your family and your school. Why not? Your family can be saved. Why not? You can get to know and have a relationship with your father that's restored. Why not? Why not? Why not? If God said it, why not? Why hasn't it happened? Why not? Why not? I mean, seriously, if God's put something into your heart, why not? Why shouldn't it happen? Because everything God's word says it should happen. Why not? Why not? I think it's about time we begin to believe what God says and do what God says. Why not? There is no reason why it should not happen. No reason. No legitimate reason why it should not happen. These men stood against possible. Look, I don't even know if I could fight off a dog that was chasing me with mace and maybe a stick. I don't know if I could fight a dog. And this guy killed a lion? Look, if somebody's coming at me with a spear, I'm running. I'm calling 911 while I'm running. I'm not going to wrestle it out of his hand and stab that fool in the head. They did. They said, this is hard. Bring it. That's what they said. This is really difficult. Okay, let's do this. We have the same idea. We have the same mentality in all these things. You see, in the beginning here, 1 Samuel 22, it said this. That David found 400 depressed, debt-ridden losers. One book over, it says David had some of the mightiest men that history ever knew, who did the impossible. They won wars. Single men killed hundreds of people for honor, for victory, for their nation, for their God. We need to have that same idea inside of us. Yeah, not killing people because, that's illegal. But the same idea that says you're born in the wrong city. All right, we could deal with that. You aren't tall enough or smart enough. You don't go to the right school. Your parents aren't the right people. All right, we could deal with that. God can deal with that. You ain't got no money? Okay, cool. God can deal with that. Nobody in your family's ever graduated out of high school or college? Okay, God can deal with that. Because if he could do that with these people, then he can for surely do that with you. You look at Steve Jobs was given up as a child and was adopted. Never met his father. Brother didn't even know who Jesus was. Changed the face of the world. Time and time again. He could do it without God. How much more can you, with the Holy Spirit living on the inside of you, with your family background, with your issues and problems and situations, how much more can you do? Because if you look at it, you don't got any excuse to be anything less than the fullness of what God's called you to be. And if you end up like Benedict Arnold one day, with no good name, I'm going to tell you this, you cannot blame it on God. You can't, because God's done everything he needs to for you. You just need to wake up and become the person that God's created you to be. Hey, if you guys have something to God, out of God today, let's give him praise.